Today's reading comes from Matthew 5, 38 to 48. You have heard that it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. You have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only one, your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even pagans do that? Be perfect, therefore, as your Heavenly Father is perfect. This is the word of the Lord.
And thank you. Well, it's good to be back. Last week, it was my privilege to speak to LPC for the very first time. And my wife always times my sermons. And as we were pulling out of the parking lot, she says, that was short. She's never said that to me before. And I was thinking, as we were pulling away, she obviously doesn't know that Bible verse that says, blessed are the brief, for they shall be asked back again. So it's just good to be back. We've been cousins and neighbors. We've been brothers and sisters for 27 years now in the city of Victoria. 25 of those years I was at a church that shared the initials GT, but felt very much connected to LPC. It used to be that if you were a church that had two initials, you went with the initials. Now all churches go with initials. And it's a little confusing for me because for the first 38 years of my ministry, I was in three different churches. One was GT and one was CT. Now, in the last 30 months, helping churches in transition, I've served in three other churches. And one was, the latest was APA. The one before that was IPC. And the one before that was HCF. When I was at HCF, and I welcomed everybody to KFC. And somebody spoke out, we prefer Swiss Chalet, and I didn't know what they were talking about. But I'm getting used to it now. And it's a joy to be with you. Some years ago, it was my privilege to visit Sydney, Australia. That's Sydney with a Y, not an I like Sydney by the sea. We went halfway around the world to participate in possibly the largest single church-driven conference hosted by the famous Hillsong Church in Sydney. The church has 8,000 members in its parent assembly, and it has 3,100 in its downtown satellite church. The buildings seat 4,000 and 1,500 respectively, with multiple Sunday services, of course. And by the way, 40 years ago, they started by meeting in a school gymnasium. But that was then, and this was now, and So now this was my first visit there, and I've, by the way, visited two more times on two other occasions. But here we were for the 12th annual convention that first time, and as it unfolded, the week-long event would draw 18,000 people daily in attendance. With such a crowd as that, the church had to lease the Sydney Olympic Village. It was home to the 2000-year Olympic Games. And I don't know how much renting the facilities would have cost them, but this was the only indoor venue large enough to house that many people in the city of Sydney. Now, the convention itself called for 2,700 volunteers from the church. Most of them every year, and we interviewed those volunteers, most of them every year would take a week's holiday to serve, you know, just like many of you have done if you've ever given yourself to summer camp ministry or a conference or convention. So it seemed like this was going to be a really big deal for us, and it was. And yet, on that trip, our initial introduction to Hillsong Church came quite unexpectedly and uninvitedly through a most unassuming character called Kadish. All I can tell you is she was a little lady. She was of diminutive stature, and looking back on it, I kind of think she would have fit quite comfortably with people that we used to serve at the street breakfast in downtown Victoria, and because she looked a bit like a street person. This was our first night in Sydney, Australia, and we had just settled into our hotel after a 17-hour flight. And, you know, it was one of those world traveler flights. Have you ever been on a world traveler seat? Sounds like it's really spread out, doesn't it? Because you're a world traveler. No? Your knees are on your... Yeah, right there. So 17 hours, we're feeling, you know... maybe we should catch some of the sights of the Sydney Harbor, and the day was fast escaping us, and we wouldn't have a lot of opportunity for sightseeing, so we figured that it was 40 minutes by subway from the hotel to downtown, and opportunity to stretch our legs. And so there, that was where we were headed, Sydney Harbor, Sydney Opera House, Sydney Harbor Bridge, Sydney restaurants, put another shrimp on the Barbie. You know what I mean? Those were our plans until Kadish got onto our subway car. Bundled up in her hooded jacket, her face mostly covered, and she took a seat behind us. And she must have been eavesdropping. Looking back now, I think it was her spiritual gift, eavesdropping. And because she overheard me tell one of our guys, and there were four of us in the group, my worship leader, two businessmen from my church, and myself. She overheard me telling them that I was going to be preaching my vision sermon soon when we got back home. And to this she couldn't help herself, so she interrupted. I think that was another one of her gifts, the gift of interruption. And she asked us where we were from and do we go to church, and asked me what's a vision sermon. And I explained, well, it's a sermon on vision casting, a sermon on the next step of the journey, a sermon on helping people see where we need to go. And so she said, you're a pastor. And I said, yes. Well, then you have to come to my church. Now, yes, I'm a pastor, but frankly, that was the last thing on our minds. Granted, it was the Lord's Day, and yes, I was a pastor, but friends, we had just spent 17 hours sitting on a plane, and we knew, too, that all week long we'd be in church sessions from 9 in the morning till literally 10:30 at night. And so we felt we could, with clear conscience, at least pass this one up. Thank you very much. But she wouldn't let up. And in fact, she said, you know, the Katina brothers are in concert. They were a Samoan singing group that I knew about, familiar name, because they had been at a convention in Kamloops a few years back. But we said, no thanks. And then she handed me a church card. And it was a pleasant little invitation. Children's faces on the front, Faith Family Friends, a map on the back. And it says, you're invited. She says, I go to the Hillsong Downtown Church, and you've got to come and see my church because it's wonderful. And I tell you, it'll do you good, and we can get off at the next stop. And we said, no, thank you. And she said, there'll be a shuttle bus waiting a few steps from the station to whisk us away to the front door of the church. And then with a sense of urgency, she announced, I'll phone ahead and tell them we're coming. And hey, this is the station now. Let's get off. Come on. Are you coming? Are you coming? Well, the answer was still no. But I guess our legs didn't get the message because we all stood up. And this, here we are, like we're four great big guys, and I wasn't the biggest of them. You understand this? And this little bitty lady in a kangaroo hood jacket was filing off the subway station with us in tow, and It must have looked like she was the animal trainer and we were the four circus elephants. You know what I mean? And we hadn't a clue where we were. In fact, in absolute dismay, we watched this subway pull away. And to this, Kadish asked, what time is it? We said, well, it's 5:25. And so now we reach street level. And she says, oh, the church shuttle stops running at 5. we're half an hour late, she said. The service is on already. Now, it's getting dark, friends. We're on the other side of the world. It's July, and it's winter there. And 5 o'clock is dark. At that, she turned to me and asked me a question I've been asked before. Do you have any spare change? She said, I can give them a call and have them pick us up, and they'll be here in no time. Now, she was obviously anxious, but not as anxious as us. She calls from a payphone. Do you know what a payphone is? It's kind of like it's on the street. It's a kind of a boxy thing. We don't know what she's saying, and we don't know who she's talking to. But an amazing thing happens. In 15 minutes, a van pulls up, much like any church white van that you've seen before. And a cordial, friendly 30-year-old sprung out the door and extends his hand to each of us with a wide smile. And he says, hello, mates. Are you the people who called for a shuttle? Come on, let's go. We're going to church. And so we all piled into the van. And I gave my head a shake because, first of all, I thought, we've been hijacked. We're going to a church we had no intention to go to, and I mean, here we are going to hear a group we've already heard, and have church that we're already going to have later in the week, and we're going to a place we haven't asked to go to by a person we didn't ask to go with. Now, how and why has this happened? And the answer is because of persistence and because of enthusiasm and because of the spiritual energy of this one skinny little eccentric street lady named Kaddish, who wouldn't give it a rest. And by the way, she wasn't even remotely connected with the conference. I'm not even sure she could have afforded it, because she, not that we could have helped her, because she disappeared as soon as we got to the destination she wanted us to find. But here was this little lady who obviously loved her God and who was obviously interested in people and who loved her church. She loved her church and she loved God and she loved people, and she was proud of her church. I mean, she was so pleased about her church. In fact, that was the message that you got from everyone who belonged there, you know, from the shuttle bus driver. I mean, we pulled them out of a service. You understand? And yet he came with a smile and a warm handshake. But from the driver of the shuttle bus to the greeter at the door, who marched us, by the way, briskly into the church, to the information desk, who the desk attendant, a charming gal, who handed us off to the female usher, who showed us to the seat. And it almost felt like they fought over us. One wanted to park us up front. When they found out we were out-of-towners, and they had their earpieces, their walkie-talkies. Yes, we have visual contact with the visitors. They're coming on. So from subway to shuttle bus to front curb to front door to info desk to sanctuary, we had 6 touches, and we were overwhelmed how hard these people worked to connect with us and to assist us. It was obvious that these people loved God and loved their church, and they served with a gregarious and sincere and persistent passion. And as you can see, it's been over 10 years now, and I'm still telling the story. I mean, I was overwhelmed learning this lesson off the beaten track, away from the directives that you might expect on a conference floor where everybody's encouraged to put their best foot forward. This was just another day in Kaddish's life. We were absolutely overwhelmed to see how hard people work to connect on an ordinary Sunday. They had a sense of mission in the moment. They didn't come to attend church. They came to participate in church. They understood this was their church, and this was their ministry to God, and this was their mission to people right there in the heart of downtown Sydney, Australia. And this was their opportunity to see somebody receive a blessing and to find a welcome. And friends, you know what? We were blessed. I'm not sorry I missed the shrimp. We were blessed and we felt a welcome, even if we wanted it or not. So, well, I'm not here this morning to stand before you to commit the sin of comparison. Every church on earth is unique, and I have no agenda to make you something that you're not, but I share this message with you this morning to inspire every one of us to be all that you can be, to love God, to learn to love your church, and out of that love, extend your love to others in the city of Victoria. What we were experiencing was normative for those people, and it was obviously formative. It was typical church protocol and witness for that congregation, and it was effective. It was so impactful. And I'm so glad I experienced it, because I believe it showed me the power of what I call a second-mile church. Pastoring in Victoria for 25 years, every year I would ask myself, where do we go from here? And that's a proper question. Maybe you've asked that of yourself and of your church. As a pastor, I was always thinking, if I don't get an answer, I think it may be an indicator that my time is up. You want to know where you're going, how you're getting there, and if it's going to be worth it. You know, those are the great three questions of life. So I would inquire the Lord, and for my own church, every year it seemed the Lord had an answer for me, because it was His church more than it was mine. So I believe the Lord would lead us into places that we wouldn't get to without His help. And I believe the Lord would lead us into being a second mile people in a second mile church. And my text this morning is Matthew chapter 5, verses 38 to 48. You heard those words in the reading this morning. And you know this as an excerpt from the Sermon on the Mount, in my opinion, the greatest sermon ever preached. Here Jesus brings a totally revolutionary concept of how to live your life. And here in verses 38 to 48, He is saying things like, you've heard it said, or everybody's doing it this way. Eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you, but now I'm saying, turn the other cheek. Then He says, and give to him that asks you, and from him that would borrow from you, do not turn away. And then He says, and if anyone asks you to walk 1 mile with him, go with him too. Now, I don't know if you know this, but under Roman law in Jesus' time, you could be conscripted right on the street any given day without notice to carry a load 1 mile. For instance, when Jesus was carrying the cross and stumbled, the soldiers just randomly chose someone out of the crowd to help. You could be conscripted on the spot. But by law, your obligation ended with the first mile. And then, if necessary, a new person would be picked. So here Jesus is bringing a teaching moment to all law-abiding citizens. And He says, when they ask you for 1 mile, give them two. The difference between an ordinary church and an extraordinary church is this: just a little bit more. And I say that to say this: I believe great churches are built not on the first mile, but on the second mile. And yet it's interesting how different church people have different thoughts on this. Some won't even visit the first mile. Others will build their lives on the first mile, but some others will build their life on the first mile and will visit the second mile occasionally. Still others will go the second mile and they'll actually live there. And that's the difference, I believe, between good and great. Doing something good for God and doing something great. That's why I believe your church should be a second mile church. And you as an individual should be a second mile man. Second mile woman. In fact, I want it on my tombstone. He was a second mile man. What does that mean? It says Matthew chapter 5. But I'll tell you something this morning. The second mile has its own unique characteristics, and so I want to share them with you because, firstly, it's uncongested. Oh yeah, there's room. Matthew chapter 5, verse 38. You have heard it said, but I say unto you. In other words, everybody else is doing it this way, but I'm saying this. You see, the majority are on the first mile. If you determine to be extraordinary, you'll find that there's not many on the road with you. And if this church determines to be extraordinary, you'll find the church will stand out immediately. People will know where you are. It's a difference between congested and uncongested. I mean, I know we live in Victoria, but have you ever been stuck in gridlock in a traffic jam, bumper to bumper? If you live in Colwood, you have. How does it feel? Congested, everything looks the same. I mean, we hate traffic jams because we're stifled. Everything looks the same. Cars to the right of you, cars to the left of you, bumper to bumper. But when you get along out onto the freeway, things start to open up. And uncongested, you can breathe a little easier. You can see where you're going. You can get there quicker. Friends, the second mile is uncongested. And the second mile church is a church of the unexpected, too. The people who heard Jesus share this teaching in Matthew 7, verse 28, it says they were amazed. They were surprised. Have you ever gone to a five-star hotel or a four-star hotel? I'm not sure the difference. My first visit to Israel, we stayed in a four-star hotel the first day. And as the week progressed, the last night we stayed in a two-star hotel. So I guess they were fine to see us go. But I'll never forget that two-star hotel because of the bed in this little room. I happened to be by myself on that trip. My wife has since joined me for a trip to Israel. But we made our way up this creaky stairway in that two-star hotel to the top room. There was a bed in this room that was 5 foot square. I've never seen a bed like that. 5 feet square. Maybe a little less than 5 feet. And I'm over 6 feet tall. And there was a quilt on the bed that was a perfect fit for the bed. It didn't fall over the bed. It was like a tablecloth. It's just perfect. I thought, okay, well, somebody's gone through a lot of trouble to make that tablecloth. And so it was kind of like a hobbit bed. And I confess, I didn't get much sleep that night. The only way I could stay covered was to roll myself into a ball. Well, you know, I guess I should have expected that from a two-star hotel. Do you know the difference between a two-star and a four- or five-star? The answer is in the expectation. The Second Mile Church does the unexpected. It's better than you thought it was going to be. There's a language of the First Mile Church. It's not my job, and we've never done it that way before. One pastor was introducing a new building program to his congregation, hoping it was Second Mile, but some were still caught in the First Mile, because he had suggested a cafe or a coffee station for the church. And by the way, I don't know anything about your history, so this may or may not apply. But there came some resistance from a sweet old Swedish lady who stood up and asked if it was really necessary. And the pastor said, well, we need to learn to be innovative, because Jesus was innovative. After all, remember, he turned water into wine. And the little old lady said, yeah, and that's the only thing I didn't like about him. So plainly, it's hard to please everybody. The language of the First Mile Church is, it's not my job, and we've never done it that way before. The Second Mile, whatever it takes to get the job done. The Second Mile is a church of the unexpected, and it's a church where the unasked for happens. In churches, people are asked and asked and asked and asked, but in the Second Mile Church, you don't need to ask. People have learned to take initiative out of lifestyle and work as a team. The Second Mile Church says, we don't want your money if you think of it as paying your dues or giving out of guilt or giving as a membership. We need you to give your time and give of your substance as an act of worship. The Second Mile Church does the unasked for. And the Second Mile Church is uncomplicated. You know, the first mile is complicated, folks. The Second Mile is uncomplicated. Remember the words, eye for an eye? Now, you just think about that, because it begs the next question, well, which eye was it? Was it the right eye? Was it the left eye? Well, I can't remember. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, it's the left eye. What? Was it the top of the eye, the bottom of the eye? Was it the full eye? Or which tooth was it? Was it a front tooth where people really notice it? Or was it a back tooth where it doesn't really matter so much? Can you help us with this? How much of the tooth was injured? It's complicated. You're always trying to figure out what's fair. Because the law can only get complicated. That's why First Mile churches end up straining at gnats and swallowing camels. They become so legalistic in their outlook that they lose their liberty. Now, I know there's a danger of going the other way, but friends, understand that we move in grace. Don't make issues out of things that don't matter. Keep an uncomplicated free spirit and an uncomplicated church. Well, we love the word, we love God, we love people. We love making a difference in our world. You know, it's just like people say, you know, have you ever read, you know, I don't believe in God. Well, have you ever read the Bible? Well, yeah, but it's so confusing. No, it isn't. It's not that confusing. I'll tell you why. Well, what's the Bible all about? Well, there's only one answer. The Bible's all about Jesus. I have another sermon on that, Don, so just letting you know that. What is the Bible all about? The Bible's all about Jesus. It's not complicated, friends. I mean, you can tell your story to anybody, and the Holy Spirit can use that story to resonate in the heart of that person to understand that God's alive and at work in his world. Now, they can resist it, but they can't take it away from you. It's not that complicated. The Second Mile Church is unthought of, too. When you think of it, no one ever thought of loving your enemies. Are you kidding me? Or praying for those who persecute you? That's why there's no manual for the second mile. There's a manual for the first mile church. But if you're on the second mile, you're willing to go with opportunities and meet the needs as they surface. The second mile church is uncommon. It's uncommon to be kind to someone who hates you. It's uncommon to pray for those who want to hurt you. But the second mile people are uncommon people. At the end of the day, the person who's extraordinary makes your church distinctive. We have to build uncommon people so the world will take note. And that's what part of this Sunday morning experience is. It's about building uncommon people. So you and I go out there. It doesn't end here, you understand. It begins here to make an impact out there. The Second Mile Church is unannounced. Give with your left hand, not knowing what the right is doing. How does that work? The First Mile Church is announced. You punch in when you arrive. You punch out when you leave. I did God a favor again this morning. I sat through a service. I filled a space. But the Second Mile Church does its tasks unannounced. It arrives hours before everybody else does and leaves without announcement. And some of you know exactly what I'm talking about. There's board members here and spouses who've given their support to that commitment that you have made. There's pastors, there's children's workers. There's so many people involved in a church who come early and leave without announcement. As soon as you announce what you're doing, guess what? You're already on the first mile. The Second Mile Church is a culture where people are appreciated and they know they're appreciated. But as the church grows, you can't possibly keep up with patting everybody on the back who deserves it. And if you've been unthanked at some point in your ministry service Welcome to the club. Get used to it. It's about being a second mile person. That last verse always stops me in my tracks, verse 48, because the second mile church is unreasonable. Be holy as I am holy. It's unreasonable to expect people to take a week off every year for Christian service. It's unreasonable to expect people to give sacrificially. It's unreasonable to expect them in the middle of a hectic week and a frantic lifestyle to give their best moments to the work and witness of God. But it was unreasonable that Jesus endured the hatred and the treachery and the rejection of men and the scourging and the mockery, the crown of thorns, the agony, the shame, the dereliction of the cross. Your Jesus is a second miler, a follower of Christ. Your Jesus is a second miler. And it's still the second mile where great churches are built in Jesus' name. And I'm convinced it's the second mile where great people live. I believe that the Lord wants your church to continue to be great. This city needs your church to be great. Commit yourself this morning, won't you, to be a second mile people, to be a second mile person. And I believe that people will make their way to you to try to figure out what you're about. They'll come looking for you. Worship team, would you come?